Hello, everybody. My name is Vasily Tarasov. I'm from Stony Brook University. Thanks for coming so early. I'll be talking about our approach for extracting workload models from block traces. This work was done in collaboration with Santosh Kumar and Aris Zadok from Stony Brook University, Jack Ma and Jeff Koenig from Harvey Mudd, and Dean Hildebrand and Anna Posner from IBM Research Almaden. So my talk will consist of five parts. First, to be on the same ground, I'm going to explain what are traces and what are their problems. Then I'll try to convince you that in certain cases, workload models work better than traces. Then I'll explain the design of our workload model extractor, then evaluate it, and finally conclude. So what is trace? Trace usually is just a sequence of records where every record corresponds to some event in a system. Event in general case can be pretty much anything, process fork, file access, or using login. Every record consists of multiple fields. One field is common across all of the traces. This is timestamp, the time at which event has happened. Other fields depend on the type of events that are being traced. We in our work used block traces, so common fields there are operation read or write, IO size, and offset. I would like to emphasize here that though we use block traces, our approach is general and can be applied to any kind of traces. There are two main use cases for traces. First is workload analysis and characterization. This can be used to tune up existing systems or design new systems that are optimized for real-world workloads. And in this case, traces is a highly valuable source of information. The second use case is trace replay, and it is used to evaluate, compare, and validate system behavior again under real-world conditions. And there are some problems in this case. Specifically, traces are very large and they're getting larger. We want to collect more and more information, and we also want to cover longer periods of time in the trace. Large traces disturb the results of a replay. For example, a replay might bottleneck on the I/O, and also the cache can be polluted. Also, it's very hard to distribute large traces across wide area networks. Another problem is that traces are large static objects that are very hard to reason about intelligently and systematically modify them and compare several traces. So we think that in certain cases, and specifically for trace replay, we can use workload models instead. Let me show you that by example. Imagine that you have two traces, Monday trace and Tuesday trace, and they were collected in exactly the same environment on the same machine. But for sure that these traces are not going to be exactly the same. Timing is slightly different, IO sizes are slightly different, everything is slightly different. So then you use Monday trace and stress your system under evaluation with this trace and observe the system's response, parameters such as latency, throughput, power, you name it. And after that, you stress the same system with trace that you collected on Tuesday. And surprisingly, the responses are actually the same. So how is it possible? Traces are different, but responses are the same. The reason is because the meta characteristics of the workload that are within the traces are the same, and this is to what the system responds as. By meta characteristics, which we call statistics in our case, I mean read-write ratio, IO size, and so forth. It is important to notice, however, that the set of statistics that need to be extracted from the trace if you don't want to use the trace depends on the specific system in question. So let me now explain how we extract these statistics from a trace. Our design goals were obviously accuracy. We also wanted the models to be small in size. We wanted flexibility and the ability to trade off model size for accuracy and reuse existing benchmarks. And of course, we want the end user of our system to be able to add new statistics and use other benchmarks. The first problem that we encountered was that workload varies within the trace as time goes. So for example, on this slide, you can see that as trace time goes, the IO size changes. And we actually want to accurately reproduce this behavior in the trace. So what we do, we perform trace chunking. And first we perform fixed chunking, and then we try to find the chunks where workload is similar. We call this process trace chunks deduplication. So for example, if we use just one parameter in this case, IO size, then these two chunks that are in red circles would be deduplicated. It's interesting that in many cases we observed that fixed chunking with the duplication led to a variable chunking, because in many traces workload doesn't change over extended periods of time. So after we have these chunks, what do we do within the chunk? Well, first of all, we assume that the workload is stationary within the chunk. It does not change over time. Then we introduce the notion of a feature function. Let me go a little bit in the details. So we consider trace record as a vector. We call it field vector. And every component that is in this vector corresponds to a field in a trace record. Then we define a function called feature function. It's basically a mathematical function that takes as an argument a trace field vector and a state. State allows us to preserve some history from the previous records. I'll show it how we use it by the example. And of course, the user can define multiple feature functions, and as a result, we have a feature function vector, which is in the bottom of the slide. So after we have a feature function vector, we iterate over all records within the trace and call feature function vector for every record and put the values that we get to the multidimensional histogram. So let me show it by example. For example, your trace field vector P consists of P1, P2, and P3, where P1 is operation, P2 is the IO size, and P3 is the offset. And the features are defined the following. F1 is just equal to P1 operation, F2 is equal to P2 IO size, and F3 is the inter-offset distance in logarithm. And this is the example where we use state variable. And then we iterate over all trace records, and we put the corresponding counters in the histogram. So in this histogram, we have three dimensions. Each dimension corresponds to a feature function. And for example, 99 says us that there were 99 reads of 2 kilobyte size, and the inter-arrival distance was between 2 and 4. So we have such a multidimensional histogram for every chunk. Now we need to generate the workload. Well, we could actually write yet another workload generator that gets the matrix as an input, but instead we decided to reuse existing benchmarks. And for that, we defined the notion of a benchmark plugin. Benchmark plugin is basically a piece of code that conforms to specific API. It takes as an input a sequence of chunk histograms and outputs a workload description in the target benchmark's language. By benchmark language, we mean, for example, command line arguments for iozone or config files for more sophisticated benchmarks like FileBench or FIO. So now let me go over overall design once again. We initially have the whole trace. We first perform fixed chunking, and at this point, user specifies initial chunking interval. Then we have a lot of subtraces, and for each of the subtraces, we collect histogram. At this point, user specifies feature functions and histogram granularity. As an output, we have a set of multidimensional histograms, which we deduplicate. And at this point, user specifies similarity metrics and a threshold. For example, in this case, you can see we had 6 histograms originally, and then we have 3 in the end. When we feed these histograms to the benchmark plugin, that generates the description of the workload in the benchmark's language, and this description can be directly fed to the benchmark to generate the workload itself. So you can see we have a number of user-specified parameters, and they allow us to achieve a trade-off, required level of trade-off between accuracy and the size of the model. So let me explain you how we performed the evaluation. We first replayed the trace on the system, and then we emulated the workload using the models that we have extracted. And we compared the responses of the systems. And 12 bullets that you see on the slide corresponds to 12 response parameters that we observed. On the slide that I will show later, I will look only at reads per second and write per second, but you can look in the paper for more details for other parameters. We did evaluation on two systems. One is physical setup and one is virtual setup. In physical setup, it was just a single physical machine. In a virtual setup, that was a virtual machine that kept its virtual machine disk on a remote GPFS server. And in this case, block trace was collected at the GPFS server. We used two traces. One is Finance One, publicly available OLTP trace of several OLTP applications, and the trace from Microsoft Build servers. And I will show you the results for physical setup and Finance One trace. So in this graph, on the x-axis is time in seconds, and on the y-axis is the throughput in the operations per second. And the graphs corresponds to reads per second and writes per second for emulation and for the replay. So you can see that red and blue lines, they closely follow each other, as well as green line and the golden line, which is a good sign. To be more precise, across all parameters and all systems that we evaluated, our average error was less than 10%, and our reduction in size was up to 25 times. So to conclude, we created an extractor of a workload from traces. We used multi-dimensional histograms of feature functions internally. We performed trace chunking to address variability of the workload within the trace. We allowed trade-off of accuracy for size, and we reuse standard benchmarks for that. And of course, we have a lot of things to finish, to do more. We want to use more different traces, more accuracy parameters, more systems. File system traces is priority number one for us at the moment because we think there are interesting properties there. We want to facilitate the selection of the parameters for our system. And also, since now trace is a mathematical object but not a huge blob, we would like to think of operations that can be performed on these mathematical models and which consequences of that we can see. And yesterday we have a poster and a lot of people ask where we can get this tool. So during Q&A session, you can write down this URL and go there and we will contact you as soon as we will release the sources. Thank you.
Rick Vero. I was sort of curious, when you take the traces, you do the chunking, and then you get to this part where you're going to create the functions, the feature functions. Doesn't that mean that the person who's looked at the traces, who's tried to pick out those feature functions, might miss something important and then that disappears?
Yeah, that is absolutely true. In general, there's an infinite set of feature functions that might be relevant to the system that will be evaluated later. So we don't say that original traces still need to be preserved to extract feature functions that might be relevant in the future. However, we provide, for example, a library of these feature functions that at least are relevant to most of the systems that are out there, right? If your system is sensitive to some specific parameter which is not in the library, you can add it, and this is why our system is extensible. It's comparatively easy to add feature function.
Okay, thank you.
Joe Tuchek, HP Labs. I was wondering, you said that Monday's and Tuesday's trace might be very similar to one another, and then you compared your synthetically generated trace to the original. Have you compared, actually measured, is Monday and Tuesday within 10% of one another, as you said, for your synthetic and real? Are they closer, more further apart?
Yeah, so this was a kind of an example from the head. It's just very often somebody uses a trace to evaluate the system, and it's a question, what if the same trace would be collected next day? Would the results be the same? And the assumption that everybody has it's the same, the results will be the same. Otherwise, if your system is optimized just for a single one trace, well, it's not good, right? So what I was trying to show by that example is that in many cases, we just need to extract some meta characteristics and replay them. And we don't need the original trace. That was the point.
So you can't characterize how accurate your 10% compares to running, the same workload twice.
Right. That's the question. What is your metric of being same? Right. We actually converting this to models provide this metric because when we compare, for example, chunks of a trace, we already need to see is workload the same or not. So and our metric is basically the difference in the counters in these metrics. Right. If you have two traces which are just sequence of records, how do you define the difference? The only thing that we say that, the diff between them is non-zero, or it's how large is that? But since it's just a text file, it's hard to define what's the difference between the traces.
Thank you.
Ajay Gulati, VMware. Very interesting work. I was wondering, what sort of size reduction did you see when you went from chunks to histograms and then you did the deduplication?
Yeah, so these numbers are actually in the papers. So we went, so the deduplication allowed us, dependent on the trace, to reduce the size in addition to just converting to model by up to 60%.
I see.
And but when we, for example, we experimented on the workloads that, on the traces that had just a very, very stationary workload, in this case, it's just a single huge chunk, and you know, the deduplication helps a lot.
I see. And there seems to be a trade-off between the chunk size and the overall accuracy. I was wondering, did you evaluate that trade-off, and what was the good chunk size?
So yeah, absolutely. As I said, we have several parameters that affect our accuracy. Matrix granularity, the chunk size, as you mentioned, and the way you compare to matrices, what is your threshold. And unfortunately, we don't have a detailed evaluation of this in the paper, but we are working on that.
Bruce Withington, Microsoft. First of all, glad to see the traces are getting some use. I've got about 1.5 questions for you. So first of all, I'm worried that there's so much user input that it's going to take somebody from this room or their ilk in order to actually be able to specify all the pieces that go into it. And maybe that's okay, but it does limit the scope a little bit. That's my half question. The other question is, have you done any work where you took your libraries that you created, which are a great first start, had them run through a trace, then had somebody look at the trace and see what you missed? And is this library set a result of doing that iteratively on traces so that you kind of reverse engineer, oh, we missed this, let's get a library for that. We missed this, let's get a library for that.
So my half answer to your half question. We actually, okay, let me just answer to the second question first, actually. So there is a work called Distiller published several years ago in Mascot Conference. There we were actually doing that. They were like, they had a library of functions, and they were like incrementally adding these functions during the replay and checking if the system response kind of matches. So this is a separate work that figures out what feature functions are relevant to this system. We assume that the person has some expertise which feature functions should be there, but of course it still is an iterative process. You take us, you use our library. If something does not match, it means that you're missing something for your system, and you need to think yourself what is missing and add it there. Yeah. And what was the first question? Sorry, Hestel, half a question.
First question was the scope of the tool in terms of does it take an expert in order to be able to actually run this thing through and figure out.
Oh yeah, right. So actually, first, if you have a benchmark, for example, is it easy to select a parameter for it, or is it hard? For many benchmarks, it's hard, right? So at least this work helps to reduce the number of parameters that you select to a well-defined set, and then you can use any benchmark without caring about the parameters of that benchmarks. That's one point. Secondly, the parameters that we use, we actually have a recipe in the paper. How do you select them? So it's not like you are just selecting them like, oh, maybe this will work. There is kind of an algorithm that converges so that when you reach required accuracy, you're done.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Josh Berry from Riverbed Technology. I had a question actually about latency. If you had sort of taken a look at how your traces compare from a latency perspective, because a lot of times with file systems, if you have a particularly metadata intensive workload, there are a lot of sort of dependent writes that happen, right? Like you need to write to the journal and then wait for that write to hit the platter before you can write to your inode safely, that sort of thing. And do you infer those dependencies at all, or how do you
no. So yeah, that's a known problem with traces. There are, in most of the traces that we have, there are no dependencies, because especially at the block layer, you have no idea are these two reads or writes dependent or not. So we do not extract this information. It's a very hard problem. However, you know, when you, for example, replay the trace, people use different techniques. They, for example, say, let's just replay it as is, so without changing the time at all. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely not good, because you're not stressing the system strong enough. And if you evaluate performance, it's important. However, this replay type is really good for evaluating some green systems, because you want to emulate like idle periods there, right? So we did experiments with this kind of replay type. And we also replayed the traces with infinite acceleration. There, all the dependencies are basically ignored. So these two things that we used, and these are two things that most often used in the papers.
Okay. Thanks.